This episode of Dirty Linen is proudly supported by Pepe Sayer Australian Cultured Butter, batch churned from single origin cream.
I would really like cooks to find a way of being less competitive and actually just spend more time together somehow. And I still feel in cooking there's too much competition, too much bloody MasterChef, too much, you know, there's too much palaver going on in the background. I really would like cooks to find a way of being more supportive for each other.
Today on Dirty Linen, we are heading to Trentham to speak to John Reed from Redbeard Bakery. It's the bakery itself has been there, I don't know, since like the late 19th century. John can correct me. It's one of those beautiful masonry Scotch ovens that's always warm and always feels like it's about to tell you something. It's such a special place, and John is one of the OG sourdough guys in Victoria. John, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Hey there, Danny. How are you?
I am really good. And as I talk about Redbeard, I do just feel the warmth of that amazing brick oven. It is such an incredible feat of engineering and food creation. Tell us about it.
So Scotch ovens were invented back in the 18th century in Britain. They're called Scotch ovens because there was a guild of Scotch oven engineers that basically went all around the English-speaking world building these amazing, beautiful brick, solid brick, massive heated ovens in every part of the English-speaking world. So the British Empire obviously extended, all over the globe, and wherever the empire went, the Scotch oven builders went in the foreguard and actually built ovens. So in Australia, we had our first oven, our first Scotch ovens built with the first fleet.
Just explain what it is, because it's not just like an oven sticking on the wall or standing on the floor. Tell us about it.
So it's basically a huge, massive lump of brick masonry that you heat up, and once it's hot, it basically bakes continually. You never let your Scotch oven go cold because it takes a hell of a lot of heat to actually heat it up. They're incredibly efficient, like they're still the most efficient oven ever built if you keep them going. So they're designed to work, 6 days a week. And the baker had a day off on Sunday and baked all the lovely lamb roasts and stuff for the local community on the seventh day, on Sunday, the day of rest. The way they work is they're wood fired traditionally, and you basically fire the oven for about 3 or 4 hours before you want to bake, and then you let the fire go out, and the fire has actually imparted all its heat into that massive, huge brick structure, and that brick structure then just emanates heat for the rest of the 24 hours. So you get basically round-the-clock baking ability for almost, nothing in terms of, fuel and energy. They're still by far the most efficient ovens ever built.
How do you feel about your oven?
I love it. It's a living, breathing, beautiful, beautiful thing that is the heart of the bakery, yeah.
And how long have you been there?
15 years now, roughly, in Trentham. Yeah, and before that I've worked with other Scotch ovens around the country. Mm.
And what's it like baking bread in – it doesn't feel like saying in the oven is the right thing to say. It's sort of like in partnership with the oven, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's very much in partnership with the oven. It takes many years to get to know your oven. So when we take on our beautiful apprentices and take them through, it takes many years for them to get up to speed and actually get to grow with and learn and learn to love their oven. and you know, they just get better and better, So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really amazing. It is such an incredible community that builds up around sourdough. And last time that I was in the proximity of your oven was for the Grains Festival, so Grains with a Z. And it's a gathering of bakers and people who work around fermentation to celebrate things that you can do with grain. I mean, what is it that makes people want to gather around something like this?
Well, I think, you know, Mary Asher, you know, a couple of weeks ago you had on the podcast was saying, it's a community of people that are incredibly supportive. For me, that's probably maybe the most important thing I can say on this podcast today is that we need to just collaborate a hell of a lot more and actually support each other a hell of a lot more. I think particularly in the cooking community, there's, you know, we so silo ourselves and we're individual business operators and we're solo operators, you know, we do our own thing, we press forward and we make our own achievements. And, you know, at the end of the day, what Grains has shown me as a small business operator is there's so much, much, much value in collaboration and working together, at so many levels. It's just something that the cooking community could really learn, I guess, from what we're doing in baking.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a big thing for bakers to attend that 2-day event. I mean, because I remember talking to someone and, you know, he was working whatever it is, like 1 a.m. till forever. And it's not just that bakers, you know, as you say, you know, you've got this oven that needs to be on all the time. And, you know, not everyone's working with a Scotch oven, of course, but there is this such an intense cycle of activity where bakers aren't only just in their own businesses, they're also in their own time zone for much of the time. Like it must have a tendency to be quite an isolating career.
Yeah, look, I think in the past, absolutely, we've had, you know, mental health issues in baking for forever because we do such, you know, antisocial hours, and, you know, that has been something that has plagued the industry. You know, we tend to have, you know, addictive personalities and, you know, get run foul in relationships and stuff. And, you know, it hasn't been an industry that has for quite a while actually looked after itself well enough. So Grains is an incredible step forward in terms of us, you know, actually being there for each other as well.
Yeah, interesting. Because it feels like, the people that bake the bread really look after the community. So it doesn't seem right that the people that are doing that aren't being looked after themselves. But you can see why. I have to say, like, I only came for a day and I just really felt like, I was like, these are my people. You know, the thing about the bakers, it's like you're all a little bit crazy, but you're so passionate and, you'd never wonder if you were doing something good in the world, I feel. You know, like it's so central, and bread is so important and has such a storied history. Like do you always feel like, yep, this is a good thing to be doing?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Danny, because, like, I struggled, you know, with various career options leading up to becoming a baker at the age of 30. And, I just found that every job I did, there was always something missing in terms of, you know, just actually feeling that I was actually making a contribution that was not, you know, there's always a dark side to, you know, every industry. I've worked in publishing for a while and stuff, and there's always the other side, whereas baking, when I found it and got into sourdough baking, there was just no downside. You're just doing good in the world, and it's such a bloody good feeling to be able to do that.
I'm really glad to hear it, because I feel like from my side it must feel a bit like that. And I mean, Murray Usher, who you mentioned, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I live near where she's baking in Ripon Lee, and to see people lining up for her bread, it's just, I don't know, it's just this real hand to hand connection, and it just seems like it's such a nice thing in a community, and as a baker to know that people are then going to take that bread home and that's going to be on their family table. I think, it is really special and it is really worthwhile. So, John, I wanted to ask you about your health, because I know that in February you had some dreadful news. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, sure. I got diagnosed in February with brain cancer. So highly aggressive, advanced brain cancer. So I've got not a lot of time, sort of months probably. So, obviously I'm hoping for a hell of a lot more. But, it's been appalling shock. But we've just been rallied around, and that's the other thing about, having an amazing community of people that you've, supported and been part of. It's just, the love and support has just been unbelievable, So my family in our turmoil at the moment have just been so beautifully held and supported, and I feel just, incredibly grateful, actually, to be, part of this, beautiful community up here in Castlemaine where I live. But also, just the baking community as well have just gathered around and absolutely gone all out to support us. It's just really beautiful.
Wow. I mean, I'm really glad to hear about, people rallying around you. But, I don't even know what the next question is to ask when, you say that, to get such shocking news. And, I mean, was it really out of the blue?
Totally. appallingly, totally out of the blue. Yeah.
What happened that you went and, got that diagnosis?
Well, I just had a couple of really bad migraines and back-to-back, and my GP said, go for a scan and just see what's going on. And, sure enough, there was this bloody massive tumour. So,
And so are you undergoing treatment?
Yeah, so I've had my skull opened up and a whole lot of tumour taken out, but they couldn't get it all, of course, so that's not good. And then lots of radio and chemo. I'm just about finished all the radio and chemo. And, there's nothing more they can do. So I've then on my own doing a hell of a lot of cuddling with my family and cuddling with my baking community and just hanging out and enjoying what time I've got left. So, yeah.
Wow. I mean, do you feel like you had a sort of philosophical framework that's helped you make sense of what's happening, or is it just, have you been thrown into a new way of thinking about your life and life in general?
I think the gift of bloody cancer is that it does give you a little bit of time. If you don't get run over by a bus or something, you get a little bit of time to actually do stuff, and overwhelmingly what there is to do for me is just spend time in conversation and cuddling and just getting to spend serious amount of time off bloody social media and in the arms of people and in the conversations with people I love. I feel incredibly fortunate to have this time to do that and the headspace. My family are obviously absolutely, it's a really, really hard time for our family, but for me, and this is a bit naughty, I guess, I feel just incredibly joyous to be alive and happy with, you know, so happy with what I've done in my life, and yeah, so grateful.
That's really, yeah, that's really amazing. I feel like, you know, and a lot of people are facing a terminal illness that it's, you know, other people find it hard to deal with, and they find it really hard to know the conversations that you should be having. And I mean, I feel like that too. I'm trying to interview you, and I also just feel like crying and having a little cuddle over the podcast. But what's it like for you? You know, I feel like there must be a lot of people saying, you know, oh, there'll be a miracle, you'll get out of it somehow. Like, you know, it's really hard for anyone to take on the idea of someone in front of them dying. You know, do you feel like, are there useful and less useful conversations that people can have with you at this time?
Gee, that's tough. Look, what, you know, for me, what I'm trying to do is, I guess, well, not trying to do, I'm finding it really pretty easy to do, is just be there for people to have, you know, whatever conversation or, you know, a cuddle or whatever they need. I just, you know, amazingly, I mean, it seems really silly, but I seem to have a boundless amount of energy for that, for actually being with people and able to listen and hear what they need to say and give them a cuddle. Yeah, that seems to be the job at the moment. Yeah, and it's easy. Yeah, it's really lovely thing to do. Yeah,
it's not a burden for you.
Not at all. No.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Like, yeah, because I feel like often that burden of making other people feel okay is often put on the sick person. Or the person who's going through something difficult, whether it's, I don't know, a shocking situation that's hard for somebody else to comprehend. But it's really, I wonder what it is that makes you feel that, you know, you're up for that and that you can, yeah, be that person, be there for somebody else when you're actually the one going through it.
Yeah, look, it just there doesn't seem to be any other choice. It naturally seems to be how I am, you know. It just I mean, and look, you know, that it's a radical change, because, you know, I'm one of those, you know, crazy silly business owners that spent, you know, if I looked up my, you know, Instagram, you know, social media, you know, you know, number of hours, it's probably like I'm up at 4.5 hours a day or something, you know, on social media. So, you know, I'm, you know, trying to, you know, promote the business, run the business, you know, and I'm spending way too much time online. And I've just spent, like, if I looked on my phone, it'd probably say zero, you know, hours on, you know, or next to zero, yeah, hours of online time. So, yeah, I've spun on a dime, really. And, suddenly life gets very, you know, real. And, you know, the value, I think, in life is just in relationship and being in close relationship with really good people.
So if you were, yeah, is that sort of your advice for anyone listening to this who's...
yeah. Keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a fabulous job, you guys out there. The advice is, you know, life is good, and, you know, spending lots of time on social media is actually doing amazing good in the world, in terms of, you know, all these amazing, beautiful, small food businesses and promoting them. So I wouldn't say spend a lot less time, but, yeah, maybe, you know, eke out a little bit of time, more time with your loved ones. Yeah.
Balance it out a bit.
Yeah, if you can. It's so hard.
It is really hard, because it's always there, isn't it? And there is always, you know, new stuff to discover. There's always another rabbit hole. So what of the bakery? How, you know, what are the plans?
So luckily for me, I've got this amazing, incredible family. So My sister is the main one who has now taken over running the bakery. My wife will continue to do it with her, and my brother Al, who started the bakery with me sort of 15 years ago, but then my wife and I bought Al and his partner out about 5 years ago, but Al's got has been dragged back in and is running the bakery with Jude, my sister. So Jude is an amazing woman. She's always been there in the back of the bakery, running the, you know, the entire, she's been running the books for the last 6-8 years, and she's actually originally a cook. She trained with Stephanie, back in the days when Annie was there, and so she's an incredibly competent, experienced, amazing cook in her own right, and she basically has run the menu and run everything in terms of like the food at the bakery. So we've always had a good rep for food in general, you know, in the cafe and stuff, because Judah's always overseen the menu there and stuff. So yeah, she's an amazing woman, and she is always she's never been in the spotlight. She's one of those people that doesn't do the spotlight at all, but she's, you know, I really need to totally acknowledge that she's the reason why the bakery has been so successful, you know, really in terms of our food offering and you know, basically I've just done the bread.
Well, not just the bread, but the bread. This episode of Dirty Linen is proudly supported by Pepe Sayer Australian Cultured Butter, batch churned from single origin cream.
We're doing it for flavour. That's all we care about, the best tasting butter that we can make. So we see big opportunity there, because majority of people that buy our butter, they'll be standing right next to me at the farmers markets and go, oh, I'll buy some salted butter for my bread, but I'm making a cake. I'll go get some supermarket unsalted butter for that. And I'm like, you make a cake out of this unsalted butter, it'll change your life, because it's so rich and it's got its own flavor complexity. And the unknown about cultured butter is, as soon as you heat it up, the flavors are just releasing.
For more information, go to pepesayer.com.au. How do you think, I mean, you would have seen so many changes in, you know, the world of sourdough in Australia in your time. Where do you think it's placed at the moment? You know, what can we celebrate, and what do we still need to work on?
That's a good question. I started, I guess, 30 years ago doing sourdough at a place called Natural Tucker Bakery in North Carlton. And then down at Rip and Lee with a lovely baker called Dave Brown, who actually started Natural Tucker with John Downs, like, I think, almost 40 years ago. So, it's a long tradition in Australia of, you know, trying to encapsulate and try and reinvent and try and rediscover sourdough, because of course all bread in Australia was sourdough pre-1900. There was no commercial yeast, so we, you know, bread, you know, we didn't call it sourdough back then. It was just bread, you know, and it was bloody fabulous, you know. And then we lost the plot with the industrialization of bread, of course, and totally screwed it up and lost it all, and lost all the trades. We, you know, closed all the beautiful old Scotch oven bakeries down and bulldozed them, and we, you know, bought out all the, you know, the old family bakeries and closed those down, and just went with industrial bread. And it hasn't served us at all. Of course, it's been a total disaster from a health point of view. So this sourdough reemergence was, I think, always going to happen, because, you know, bread has, you know, became seriously broken, and we need to address, you know, the not only the health concerns, but the, you know, the agriculture concerns that come with, you know, really bad farming. So that's associated with commodity grains and stuff. So there's a whole agenda behind our, you know, our grains movement, which is about getting small again and getting localised and getting serious about actually doing grain again properly. And then, you know, that flows on into all the, you know, baking products in terms of, you know, trying to support, you know, seriously good farming again. So, yeah.
Yeah, I do feel like there is a bit of a movement to consider flour as a food rather than just, you know, this stuff that, you know, fills out your cakes and your bread.
Yeah, and we've, you know, thankfully, you know, cooks are getting on board, you know, which is, you know, thankfully there's still, there's still a little bit of a, yeah, hiatus there in terms of communication between what we're doing and most cooks, but that's being filled really rapidly. You know, it's amazing to see, really good cooks. You know, working with beautiful local flowers. You know, I can name names, but they're amazing cooks, really doing great stuff with beautiful, fresh, stone ground, you know, wholemeal flour.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like, you know, really beautiful, fresh flour from great grains, you know, with a provenance. And it's really, once you smell it and use it, like it's a pretty fast journey back to thinking about grains. Well, I guess dismantling that sort of commodity mess that we've got into with something like flour.
Well, it's, you know, it's that whole thing of being flavour driven. I mean, that's why cooks are going to get there, because, you know, at the end of the day, that you know, despite, you know, budgets and, you know, trying to balance the, you know, balance menus and stuff, there's, you know, inevitably, you know, cooks are just fascinated by flavour. And, you know, the thing about this new grain movement is that, you know, we're finding that there's just such huge diversity and flavour variety, you know, out there in amongst all the varieties of wheats and grains that we've just neglected for too long.
It's been really flattened, like those beautiful Scotch ovens have been flattened. It's just so sad to think about all the work and all the stone that went into them, and then to think about them being, I guess, at best dormant, but really at worst just not there anymore. That is really sad. This might be a really dumb question, but with brain cancer, like, do you notice differences in your brain and how you think?
Yeah, there's a few bits falling off.
Really?
Yeah, I've sort of, one of the shitty things is that I've lost vision on one whole side of my head. So I've got, still got two eyeballs that sort of work, but only half of each eyeball on the left hand side. So that's a bit weird. I've got this, I feel like I can see everything, but when I wave my hand in front of my face on my right hand side, I can't see my hand. So that's a bit weird. But apart from that, I'm losing a little bit of, when I go to make a cuppa and it takes me 5 minutes to actually find the loose leaf tea canister. I've got to go searching around a kitchen that I've, you know, lived in for 15 years and actually locate the damn tea canister. So, yeah, there's a couple of things falling off, yeah.
Interesting. I mean, that's probably a really dumb word to use as well. But, John, is there anything else that you would like to say?
Probably not a hell of a lot. Just, I would really like cooks to find a way of being less competitive and actually just spend more time together somehow, you know. I just see the, you know, what we've achieved with grains over the last sort of, you know, 8 years or something has just been phenomenal in terms of transforming the culture of baking so that we, you know, we actually you know, really support each other. And I still feel in cooking there's too much competition, too much bloody MasterChef, too much, you know, there's too much palaver going on in the background. I really would like cooks to find a way of being more supportive for each other. If there was any wish I could have is for you guys to really, I mean, and this is the beauty of your podcast, of course, Danny, is that you know you're doing it. You know, this is bringing people together. This is having the conversations. You know, as you say, the difficult conversations. And this is a really big one for me, looking from the outside, not as a cook or a trained cook, is just you guys need to, you know, actually support each other more. And it would be amazing if you could find, you know, post-COVID, like, and, you know, with the work you've been doing, ways of being together that are not competitive and not, you know, shitty, you know? Yeah.
Mm. Mm. I reckon there really is an appetite for change. And I think, yeah, COVID has definitely, I suppose, revealed some of the silliness. Like, I suppose when you think about things that are important, and, you know, the pandemic's done that for a lot of people. And of course, you know, a major health situation will do that to a person as well. It's like, yeah, what are you actually trying to win at? It's just, yeah. Surely it is a communal project to feed the world. So yeah, why don't we all stand shoulder to shoulder and do it?
And, you know, I love the way you in particular just, I mean, I don't know where the journey is exactly for you at the moment. I'd love to hear. But, you know, the whole critic thing, you know, you've just spun on a dime and gone, you know, full support, you know, rather than, you know, writing critical reviews, you know, and making that the, I mean, obviously that the public has still got a, you know, bloody, you know, it's impossible to sate that, you know, need for the public to actually rank everything. But you haven't played that game in the last, you know, 12 months.
Yeah, well, that's it's certainly something that I reflect on a lot. And I guess my reviews have always been pretty glass half full, and it's been more trying to send people to places rather than steer people away from places. I've always thought, you know, not quite if you can't say anything nice, don't say it at all, but more that there are so many good places to send people to that, you know, you don't need to waste too much time steering people away from places that perhaps aren't worth their time and money, in my opinion. I think it's a big conversation, and certainly bigger than any work that I do around, you know, the space of restaurant criticism. What's it actually for? For me, it's always been about, it's a consumer guide. So it's okay, you know, I'm going out on Saturday night or Sunday for brunch or whatever it is, you know, Wednesday for a work meeting, where will we go? So it's just that basic guide. But it's also, I've always seen the project as trying to put things in context. So to try to give people a little bit of information that they wouldn't perhaps know, or that it's not easy to perceive just by going to the restaurant. The review that I just had in last weekend of Omnia, and we've had Steve Nairn on the podcast, that was really focused around skills and what do we lose as a community if we don't value the skills that are often invisible to the diner, but that really underpin a restaurant and the restaurant's project. So what I love about Omnia is that the dishes work not just as, you know, something yummy on a plate, but they're almost like training modules for the staff. So the duck, you know, it's aged for 2 weeks. There's, you know, it's broken down, so there's skill in that. It's aged and checked all the time, you know, to see how it's aging. You know, it's you know, the legs are cooked one way and the breast cooked another. There's a sauce which is made from 3 different duck stocks. So one made with the neck, one made with the wings, one made with something else. And it's those sauces are combined at different concentrations to be the basis of the jus. And, you know, it's different people that follow that process through in this kitchen. And to me, it's like, then what you end up with is this amazingly delicious duck. And of course, you know, no diner is going to realize that or know it. And that's not the point. The point is almost that all this work's invisible. But my review in, like, you know, a few paragraphs, what I'm trying to get across is, So much goes into it, and we need to value it, because if we don't, then no one's going to do it anymore. So I guess that's the point of reviews for me, is like, yes, it's a nice place to be, and yes, it's yummy, but what else? So that's sort of what I try to get across. And yeah, then there's a star out of five, but
yeah.
My star's usually up pretty high.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go. As you interviewed me.
Yeah, look, I think you need to be interviewed more. I love, you know, your little ones about, you know, getting stuck on a bus and, you know, in the middle of nowhere.
Okay. I'll see if I can, yeah, do more of those. I didn't know if it was okay to do a podcast. It was just a story. But in summer, we tried a few things out. But anyway, it's not all about me. It's actually supposed to be all about you, John. It's an absolute honor to talk to you. I feel like, you know, it's amazing to talk to you at this really massive time in your life and massive time for everybody that's around you. I'm really grateful to be in your orbit, and yeah, I hope you have many, many months left, and I know that whatever time is there for you, you're going to make the most of it. But thank you so much for chatting today.
Absolute pleasure, Danny. And just a little plug for Redbeard. Keep going, people. keep heading up there. We're still open. We're doing our thing, and we need your support still, particularly with, you know, Victorian government not actually allowing us to have, you know, to have enough seats to actually make most cafes and restaurants sort of viable still. Yeah, it's a tough time, and we've lost JobKeeper, of course, now. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, really timely. So, yeah, let's get out there and eat, everyone.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, Danny.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about. We spend a week thrashing around each issue, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you.